Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast.
Inside Slant Podcast.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com.
Shay, where do you rank Bill Self's class?
It's definitely one of the top 10 classes in the country.
Bringing you all the latest info from the coaches, players, and recruits.
Kirby, how big is this commitment?
Well, he's the type of recruit that can change the whole class.
For all of the latest KU news, analysis, and discussion, go online to JayhawkSlant.com. The online leader in recruiting and team coverage. Here's the staff from JayhawkSlant.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome into another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We're back with a full squad today because there is lots of men's basketball news. There's still lots of football stuff happening. We've got news on the gridiron as well as news from the recruiting trail in both of the main sports of the University of Kansas. So I will be joined by my good friend Shay Wildebor as well as John Kirby. We're also going to talk about everything going on with both programs and be joined for a really entertaining interview with Jeff Ketchum from OrangeBloods.com, previewing the game coming up this weekend. Let's go ahead and get right into this thing, bring in my man Shay Wildebor, our man on the Kansas basketball beat. Shay, how you doing this evening?
I'm good, man. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Good to hear from you. I haven't talked to you in a little bit.
I know. Dude, I was just thinking, man, it's been a while. You know, I took Kemper to the Chiefs game last week, the Giants, and then took him to Allen Fieldhouse for a game. And
it's amazing, you know, how life is starting to feel a little bit more like normal, huh?
It is, man. And it's amazing to me how and Kirby can attest to this, how time flies, man. I mean, I can remember the day he was born and I was a freshman. And it's like I've only got 3.5 more years of him underneath my roof. So I'm trying to get in as much as I can while Dad's still pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, enjoy that. And it is a great time. I think I still remember my time with my dad when I was that age, and I'm lucky he's still, you know, still lives here in Kansas City. He and my mom, and we're very, very close. But those were great days, being able to go and do and really be able to kind of go and do just about anything, you know.
For sure. Enjoy that. We got a big one Sunday night.
Yes. Oh, no doubt. That game against the Raiders is getting bigger by the minute. And, you know, no Odell Beckham going to be standing on the sidelines. But I think we may have dodged a bullet with that one, though, Shay, to be real honest.
The defense is getting a little bit better. I think maybe if the offense can just get it figured out, man. What is there, 7 games left?
Mm-hmm.
2 against the Raiders, you got 2 against the Broncos, you still got 1 against the Chargers. I mean, let's get this thing, man. Let's start rolling.
Absolutely. There's no better. We're peaking at the right time. That's what I keep looking at.
For sure.
Speaking of peaking at the right time, it's about time we bring in our man, the publisher of JayhawkSlant.com, and the most veteran reporter on the Kansas football beat, Mr. John Kirby. Kirby, how you doing this evening?
Good, boys. What's up?
We're ready for Sunday night football.
Well, I can tell you this. You guys sitting here talking about all this lovey-dovey stuff. I'm ready for my boys to get out of the house.
Hey, listen, Randy, he is lying to you. Don't believe that for a second. Because once he's done, it's just he and Cindy, and you know what that means then. She's really in charge.
She's been in charge.
Well, then it's going to get even when your last boy's gone. Then it's just you and Cindy. You know what that means?
That means he's going to go get another dog.
It's all over for Curb.
I'll tell you what.
When he goes and gets. It'll be time for Hank to have another friend by then.
Yeah, and my bank account will grow.
Without having to feed those two little monsters all the time, John. Oh, yes, you will have a lot more disposable income.
Kirby's going to be. Listen, Kirby's going to be lonely. I'm telling you.
I think, you know what, as somebody that doesn't have kids, obviously, full disclosure here, I think that that's something that everybody goes through is like, you know, they think it's, hey, you know, it'll be all right. And then, I mean, I still remember, you know, when I moved to college, you know, moving into the dorms and you're all excited. And then when that door closes and you realize that you're there by yourself, everything kind of changes.
It's different
when that reality sets in. I think that's the way it is for a lot of parents too. It's like you don't realize how much you missed having them around until they're gone. So
Sundays now will be bad.
Now that we've dove headfirst into sentimental... God, what has happened to us? We sound like some old women here.
You two do. You two guys do.
You know what, John? It's been a long day, man. It's been a long day. Let's get into this thing. Let's talk about a tremendous start to the season for the Kansas men's basketball, going out to New York City, Madison Square Garden, and really handling Michigan State. I know you can't always take a lot away from what is really the first game of the season, but what did you think of the performance? Who stood out to you? And maybe what surprised you about that performance?
Yeah, first of all, man, I going into that game, I think at last count, and I might be wrong, I think KU was a 4.5-point favorite. And especially without you're without Jalen Wilson, you've got some returners, but also a new group of guys. I had no idea what to expect. I really didn't. I knew it was a game that Kansas was probably going to win close, but it wouldn't have surprised me if they lost. Simply because they're still coming together as a group, they're still growing, they're still meshing, and man, I mean, they outscore Michigan State by 7. In the first half, I think it was 39-32 at halftime, and then the second half really kept him at arm's length. Obviously, you look at Oshai Agbaji, 29 points, 9 of 17 from the field, 3 of 6 from behind the arc, 8 of 8 from the free throw line, just an unbelievable performance by him. I know obviously he tested the NBA waters and was real close to staying in the draft and kind of decided last minute to come back out and make a name for himself. He couldn't have started off any better. I loved what I saw from Remy Martin simply because he didn't take any shots the first half and came back out, was an efficient 5 of 9 from the field the second half, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, 15 points, didn't rush anything. Didn't play out of character, didn't try to force anything, just, played his game. And the one thing, Randy, and I know Kansas fans will probably attest to this, in years past, you look up, KU has a 16-point lead or a 17-point lead. 3 minutes later, it's down to 2 or 1 or tied or they're down by 2. And that wasn't the case at all against Michigan State. I mean, they kind of delivered the knockout blow, kept him at arm's length, and never really allowed Michigan State to threaten them again. And to me, that's the sign of a really good team. If you can get a good team down, early in the second half, and you can keep them at arm's length and not allow them to make a run, I mean, that's a confidence killer for an opposing team. Only turned the ball over 9 times, hit 19 of 24 free throws, only sent Michigan State to the line, I think, 16 times. So, surprising, yeah. I mean, I figured again, game one, like you mentioned, I thought really David McCormick would be a little bit more efficient. Just 4 of 11 from the field, only grabbed 2 rebounds, 0 on the defensive end. So that was kind of surprising. I thought Christian Brown would be a little bit more crisp. Struggle for him, obviously, 3 of 7 from the field. But he did. He had a game-high 8 rebounds. And really, in the second half, didn't force anything. His shot wasn't falling. Offensively, he wasn't much of a factor, so we found other ways to get involved. And, 8 rebounds and 2 assists. So it was overall just a, to me, really an impressive performance by this squad, being able to, come out the first game, kind of establish their dominance in the second half and not let up.
Shay, you covered the press conference today. Was there anything interesting from Bill Self? Anything that stood out to you about it?
Aside from really just talking about the guys they signed this week, not a whole bunch. I mean, he talked about Tarleton State and kind of what to expect from those guys. I know his good buddy Billy Gillespie is the head coach down there, and they were supposed to come to Lawrence last year, and obviously COVID kind of wiped that out. And just talking about still coming together as a group, defensively, how they've got some adjustments they need to make, and things like that, and kind of just taking one game at a time and kind of what he expects on Friday night. But to me, I think he really trusts this team. I think he's got guys. I mean, when you got guys that are returning starters like a Christian Brown and Ochai Agbaji, a David McCormick, Jalen Wilson, obviously, who suspended the next 3 games as well. But, I mean, I just think he has a lot of trust in this team. I think the one thing that did stood out, though, is, what he thought about Zach Clements. And, today he talked about on Hawk Talk about how, he kind of gave Zach the option to redshirt, and which might have been know, better for him, but not for the team, because Bill thinks that he can have an influence. And, you know, Zach decided that he wanted to play this year and help the team. And, you know, he might not get as many minutes as he wants to, but I think he's got a chance to really, at different spots, at different certain times of the season, you know, play a role. So I'm excited about this team. I know, obviously, we're one game in, a lot of more games to go, but just based on what I saw against Michigan State and kind of what Coach Self said today, I just think he has a lot of trust in this team. And that's not to say that he's not going to do a lot of coaching, because he is, but I don't think it'll be the type of coaching that he's had to do in the past, where everything's hands-on, everything's new, putting in a lot of new things, implementing things. I mean, with this team, a lot of the guys were already familiar with his system. You know, unlike last summer, this summer they had a chance to all be on campus and work together as a group. And so I think there's a lot of familiarity with these guys. And, you know, I think this is a group that he's going to love coaching.
Yesterday was National Signing Day for the early period with men's basketball. Break down who the program signed and what are your thoughts about this class and how it will ultimately turn out in regards to the overall quality of it.
Yeah. A big day today, or obviously yesterday. They just announced him today. You know, you have Grady Dick, Zuby. I'm not going to pronounce it, even attempt to pronounce his last name. MJ Rice and Ernest Uday. You know, you got really two really talented guys on the perimeter, and MJ Rice and Grady Dick, and you got two really talented big guys down low in Ernest and Zuby. I'm not sure, and I know I think Bill Self mentioned it today. They might have lost out on one or two guys, but I'm not sure they could have done a better job. Listen, Randy, we all know what's going on with the NCAA. We all know what's hanging over KU's head. We all know that they're still waiting for an answer. We all know that we don't know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, or why it's going to happen. We saw what happened with Oklahoma State last week. So really, I mean, everything's on the table. It could be post-game suspension, or yeah, postseason suspension, scholarship. I don't know. So for this staff to go out and land these guys, and all four of these guys, depending on really who leaves next year and who returns, all four guys have a chance to come in next year and play immediate roles. I mean, obviously, you know, you got a Grady Dick who's in state. You got to keep those guys in state, and I think he has a chance to be a star. You know, you've got an MJ Rice, who many people early on thought was a lock to attend NC State, and here he signs with Kansas. You know, Zuby, the kid from Garland, Texas, was enamored with Bill Self in Kansas early on and, you know, got rid of his recruitment right away. And Ernest Uday is a kid that had a ton of options, took some visits, narrowed his choices to Kansas and UCLA, and, again, was a guy much like Zuby that was enamored with Kansas, with Bill Self, the program, with the bigs that they've had in the past, the success that they've had, and yeah, committed. So, yeah, I mean, these guys are going to be guys that right away step on campus and have a chance to play immediate roles. Kudos to the staff. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like, and who knows what happens behind closed doors with other schools talking about Kansas and their situation. I imagine that some pretty harsh things are said by other schools, but for the staff to come in, close the deal, and still have maybe a couple options on the table for the late signing period, you know, to me, they hit a grand slam with this class.
That's our man, Shea Wildebor. Shea, we appreciate you joining us tonight to give us the latest on the men's basketball program. We will talk with you again soon, man.
All right, fellas, you guys have a good night.
That's Shea Wildebor. Now I'm going to bring in our man, John Kirby, on the football beat. Kirby, before we talk about the Texas game, we're going to hear from the publisher of orangebloods.com, Mr. Jeff Ketchum, hear what he has to say about the Texas Longhorns and exactly where things are right now as the Jayhawks gear up for the matchup on Saturday with UT.
I'm going to bring in my man, Jeff Ketchum from orangebloods.com. Jeff, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good. It's always good to talk to you, Kirby. Glad to have Kansas on the schedule.
Yeah, I'm sure that. Hey, listen, I was looking at your message board, okay? And man, that 4-5 start, it looks like a pretty rough crowd, man. Just tell me about the Texas fan base right now.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit like Frankenstein. The townspeople have their pitchforks, and everybody needs blood at this point. You know, this was a team. If I can point you back to when Texas loses to Oklahoma, which was the first game of this current four-game losing streak, as soon as it ended, Steve Sarkisian basically said, we'll see Oklahoma again. We want to play Oklahoma again. That means We'll be back in Dallas in a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. And it gives you an idea of how lofty the expectations for this season were, that even on the back heels of the second loss of the season, there was still very much a confident projection of what this 2021 thing was going to be. You fast forward a few weeks later, a month later, if you will, and frankly, you know, I'm sure that your listeners won't completely have a feel for this, but it feels like a big old clown show down in Austin right now when you consider that in the last week you had Monkeygate, which was a completely weird story to just drop out of the heavens because of so many, like, on some level, you know, if it had just been, if the story was just that, like, a dog bit somebody, like, it just, it doesn't, it, the thing, the support animal was a monkey for his girlfriend, who can't just be a girlfriend. She's got her own unique story. You know, and if that was just the thing, but then the very next day, a video of the same coach partying after the Baylor loss, although it's never been clear if it was the same night or the next night, it's still, you've got videos of coaches having a really good time. And then you have a situation last week where they get to Wednesday and there had been so many tardiness. The tardiness from missing practice and being late to meetings, and even on game days, being late to meetings on game days, they finally felt like, hey, we got to put our foot down. So Steve Sarkisian lectures the team in the middle of last week about the need to show up on time, which feels like kind of a day one thing for me, that it's happening in November feels problematic. And then when that ends later in the, after the practice, Sarkisian gets into a shouting match with a player on the team, which leads to that player's locker being cleared out same day, which leads same day to that player coming back to the program, unofficially being given a 1-quarter suspension, which he sat out against Iowa State on Saturday and then came in and played the rest of the game. Then that player quit 2 days later after a 30-7 loss. And then yesterday you've got a situation where one of the Texas players releases a video of one of the Texas assistant coaches reading the players, the riot act on the bus home. And it's a lot. It's been a lot, John, to process over. That's a week. That's just a week. And it really doesn't even completely tell the full scope of the things going on behind the scenes in the locker room surrounding the Monkeygate story. There's just more there than even the public knows about. So, you know, Kansas gets a piece of Texas this week, probably at the ideal time. Like, I don't know that either one of you and I could say Kansas is going to threaten Texas this weekend. They might. They did Oklahoma. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to say with this Kansas football team from week to week the exact competitiveness that we're going to see. But Texas is the same way. I mean, you know, they've been blown out twice this season. They're on a 4-game losing streak. There's some stuff in the locker room that's not ideal. Oh, by the way, Bijan Robinson may not play this week. So, you know, if you're Kansas and you had to pick somewhere along a 12-week spot on the schedule to get Texas in Austin, I think this is as good as it gets. I mean, there are a lot of people in Austin that fully believe that Kansas – will punch Texas in the nose, because I think a lot of Texas fans watched Kansas play Oklahoma and they thought they may not have seen Kansas play any other time this season, but they watched that game. And I think they came around thinking that team can give our team problems. And I suppose the question I would have for you, John, can that team do that in Austin? Like, can it take what it bottled up against Oklahoma at a 4-quarter game against a better team than Texas? Can they bottle that up? Is Texas ripe? Are we getting a good Kansas team this week coming off of the Kansas State loss? Like, I don't know what to think about this game.
Jeff, you know, the Oklahoma game, if that's the game the Texas fans saw, obviously that's probably the best game Kansas has played all year, okay? So, you know, Oklahoma came in, and even some of the Kansas coaches said they might have been sleepwalking a little bit. Kansas caught them a little off guard, but Kansas played physical that game, and they were into it, and the sideline was into it, and, you know, and then Oklahoma woke up. You know, they had 320 yards of offense in the second half. So, you know, it's a great question. Listen, 2 years ago, okay, Kansas goes down to Austin, and you and I probably had you on 2 years ago, and we're sitting here talking about how bad Texas is going to beat Kansas, right? And they had to, you know, go down and score in the final minute to beat Kansas. So it's a weird series. What, 4 years ago, Kansas beats Texas here in Lawrence. So, I mean, it's just it's been a goofy series at times. So, God, I don't know if I'd bet on this thing at all.
Well, look, here's the thing that's different about, I mean, beyond Oklahoma at this point is clearly better than a 4-5 Texas. You know, the Longhorns offensively are not the team that dropped a 70 burger on Texas Tech earlier in the season. And at one point, first month of the season, this looked like a historically good Texas offense. Jordan Whittington at wide receiver gets injured. And the thing we talked about with this Texas team all during the summer was that on paper, Xavier Worthy, Jordan Whittington, and Joshua Moore looked like a really good first three receivers. And, you know, even Joshua Moore, as inconsistent as he's been, this is a guy that's been an ESPN highlight reel guy a couple of times in his career. Like, he's had some moments. But we said, if those guys get hurt, man, even though Texas has a million receivers on scholarship, we couldn't pick one amongst the other dozen or so that you would say, okay, well, that's a guy you definitely want on the field. That's the fourth guy. And you go into the season and Whittington gets hurt and there's nobody to replace him. And the Texas offense, I'll give you this stat. Pre-Jordan Whittington injury in the Oklahoma game, Texas quarterbacks had a combined 162 quarterback rating, which would make it the third best in the Big 12. Since Jordan Whittington's since that play, Texas's combined quarterback team efficiency rating is 129. So we're talking about the passing game in the middle of the Oklahoma game was legitimately one of the best in the Big 12. The passing game in the last 3 weeks has legitimately been so. If that stretch of play ranked amongst Big 12 quarterbacks, it would be 11th. And not only would it be 11th, but that 129 would be 10 points lower than number 10. So you know, this isn't, if Texas shows up on Saturday sleepwalking, once they wake up, what are you waking up to? And this is an offense now that loses Joshua Moore. So they were already – they had receivers catch 5 passes last week. Xavier Worthy caught 2, Joshua Moore caught 2, and another cat caught 1. Well, Joshua Moore is off the team now. So from last week, there are 3 receptions and 2 players that were involved in the passing game in the loss to Iowa State. Xavier Worthy can go beastly, and he could catch 10 for 300, and I don't think anybody would blink. He's the best freshman receiver Texas has ever had. And if he stays 3 years, we might be talking about him in the same breath as Roy Williams and Jordan Shipley as top of the elite Mount Rushmore players at that position in school history. But teams have kind of – they don't have anybody else to worry about. So they're dictating coverage to Xavier Worthy. It's been a lot harder for them to get the ball to him. And because he's not getting the ball, the other receivers have to make plays. There are no other receivers left on the roster who've made plays this season. Okay. Joshua Moore is now gone. Jordan Whittington's not playing in this game. So Texas is going to be rolling out Xavier Worthy and the 7 dwarfs, so to speak. Because I'm just telling you, there's legitimately not another receiver on the roster that Texas fans can tell you definitively will catch a pass on Saturday night outside of Xavier Worthy.
All right, so your quarterback.
Where I would have said, real quick, John, just to finish my thought, where I once would have thought Kansas might have to score in the 60s or in the 50s to beat Texas, because Texas just looked like a team at one point this season that could drop a 50 on anybody. I think the number for Kansas this weekend is probably in the 20s. This is a Texas offense that suddenly looks like a cap gun. And I don't even know that Kansas needs to play its A-plus game to win this game. But if the Kansas team from 2 years ago showed up, that team would beat Texas by 2 touchdowns based on the way they look right now on paper.
All right, so I did want to hit a couple topics with you. Number one, you talked about the passing rating and where that's at. Where's everything at with the quarterback position right now?
They're going to almost – well, look, I don't know. Like, so Sarkisian said he's going to make an announcement on Thursday. They're now talking about Casey Thompson's hand injury as if that's a thing. He hurt his hand weeks ago. He's been playing through it, and they haven't said anything about it at all. He got benched on Saturday, and now there's a well, – he's not a healthy thing. Hudson Card has not – You should. I mean, in week one, Hudson Card comes out and has the best quarterback efficiency rating in a debut performance, basically in the history of the program. And it was against a ranked Louisiana team. They're ranked again currently. Since then, you and I, John, could go out there and play college quarterback and look more sure of ourselves than Hudson has. And look, my nickname on my website is I'm the president of the Hudson Card fan club. But while I love his talent, I would be remiss. I would be disingenuous if I said he looked like a player that needs to be playing right now. So Sarkisian indicated on Monday that he would tell us on Thursday. If all things are equal, Casey Thompson almost certainly starts this weekend, because even a hurt Casey Thompson at this point has been better than the last few versions of Hudson Card that we've seen. But if the injury thing is legit, if they really is like, hey, we're going to let him heal, then Hudson Card could be the starter. And then if I'm Kansas, I'm defensively throwing all caution to the wind. I mean, we are not going to sit back. We are going to bring – against an offensive line that can't block anybody, we're bringing pressure every time. And we might get beat on a couple of plays, but we're going to create some turnovers. We're going to spook the quarterback. We're going to take advantage of a guy that has very low confidence right now, doesn't have a group of receivers that can burn him outside of one truly great one. Like, look, okay, you better have Xavier Worthy figured out. Or that dude can do what he did to Oklahoma – if he can put together an entire like mixtape of catches that where he can humiliate guys. But I'm telling you, he can also be bottled up. And if he's bottled up, I think Texas becomes a very beatable team. And again, it's not announced yet, but there's a lot of speculation this week that Bijan Robinson, who is Texas's best player, that he's day to day, but there's a sense that he's not going to play this week with what is a neck injury. And like I said, Texas is as vulnerable right now as they've been at any point this season. And this game for me really is a lot more about Kansas than it is Texas. Can Kansas let me put it to you like this. Texas has home games against Kansas and Kansas State left on the schedule. Texas is so vulnerable that they're playing K-State this week. I'm definitely picking K-State. If that game is this week. However, they don't play Kansas State this week. That's in a few weeks. They play Kansas this week. And what I don't know is whether or not – I believe Kansas will show up for a fist fight, which gets them halfway there. If they can execute remotely like they did a couple of years ago, when, quite frankly, they probably should have beat Texas in Austin. They were great that day offensively. If they can do that, the Texas defense – there's no part of this team that's playing well. So – my advice to Kansas would be don't kick the ball to Deshaun Jameson on special teams. Like, why even mess with that? Because Texas can – if Worthy is out – I mean, excuse me. If Bijan Robinson is out, the identity of this team is completely stripped of itself going into the game. And it's just about whether or not Kansas can make them pay for that. If they show up, and let's say if KU shows up and plays a B-minus game, we're probably talking about a game that goes into the fourth quarter where it's the outcome is in doubt. So, you know, that's just my way of saying Kansas doesn't have to play an A game to win this week, because Texas isn't situated where, I haven't seen an A game from Texas in a while. I don't expect to see it this week.
So, I mean, Jeff, it's pretty obvious. You don't know how this thing's going to play out. So if I put you on the spot for my final question and just say, give me your prediction, what would you say?
Texas wins, but they sure as heck don't cover. I mean, I've just seen Kansas play Texas really competitive enough times, even when Texas has been really good. I mean, you know, we're probably old dudes that remember that game back in 2004, but, you know, that took Vince Young faking out, was it Nick Reed, to get a first down on 4th and 16? Like, you know, and that was the year they won the Rose Bowl. So, you know, if I had to give a score, I would say something like 27-17. It's hard for me to see Texas scoring 30 points unless they get something on defense, unless something on special teams happens that really allows a Texas offense that I'm lacking confidence in right now. You know, I don't know that they break 30 unless they're scoring points off of explosive plays in the other two phases of the game.
Well, Ketch, you have made this one even more interesting for the Kansas fans, for those Kansas fans out there that think, you know, that haven't followed Texas and think that they are facing the typical Longhorns that you always know about.
They started listening to this and they're like, oh, they're going to have to listen to the Texas guy tell us how great Texas is.
Yeah, no. So Kansas fans right now, if they're listening to this, okay, they're going, okay, maybe I'm going to have that game on at 6:30 Saturday.
If Kansas shows up with the attitude of we're going to jump them straight out of the locker room, I think Kansas has a real chance. This Texas team's in disarray this week. I mean, like Sarkisian's got to do a press conference tomorrow where he has to answer a question about who the snitch player on his team is that released a video of one of his assistant coaches dressing down the locker room. And, oh, by the way, in the context of – this thing is a soap opera behind the scenes, excuse me. So, and we're not done. Like for Kansas, this is going to be a normal game week. So it's about how do they do all the things they're supposed to do, the basics, and do them right this week and show up with the right mindset. And sometimes playing away from home is the best thing that can get you there. And this will be a big win for Kansas, a big performance to be able to say, even if they don't win, like, hey, Texas and Oklahoma, the two future SEC schools, we showed how good we can play against the supposed elite programs. We're building on something here. Like, I just think that I think this thing's a really second half ball game if Kansas just shows up with the right attitude. They show up with the right attitude. It's not going to be 35-3 this week. It's just not. Because K-State's better than Texas. And that Kansas State team, they wanted a fight. I watched that game last week. I don't know that Texas wants a fight this week. So if Kansas just shows up with its fist balled up ready to fight, this game's going to be real interesting. I'm picking Texas to win because it would be, you know, lunacy for me not to. But – you know, I think I've painted the picture that suggests if Kansas comes in and shocks Texas on Saturday, how shocking should it really be?
Well, that would be shocking, I think, to a lot of people.
More so, and normally the reverse would be true. If Texas loses to Kansas on Saturday, Texas fans won't be shocked. They will be way less shocked than Kansas fans would be. And it would make for quite the, you know, I don't know that either fan base truly has a grasp for the makeup of this game. Because I think, you know, this is probably one of those games when the schedule comes out, when you're a Kansas fan, you know, you probably, oh, whatever. Like, let's just, let's not do anything that makes us hang our heads when the game's over. I don't think it's one of those weeks. I think it looked like it could be one of those weeks early in the season. But I think this is about the fight in both teams. And if neither team wants to fight on Saturday, we're talking about a real ugly game.
Well, hey, you know, let's hope we have some. Hey, let's hope there's some entertainment and at least something to watch. So, Jeff,
if Texas had played Kansas last week, John, they would have played tiddlywinks for fourth quarter, and I guess somebody would have won like 2-0. I guess I don't know.
Well, Kitch, I don't know. As always, man, you are the best. You are great listening. The fans will love listening to this one, and I really appreciate you joining me on the podcast. And, buddy, we're going to talk to you soon.
You got it, John. Love you, man. You guys have a great rest of the week.
All right, Kirby, you heard Ketchum. He thinks the Jayhawks have a chance to be in this game, which, oddly enough, isn't that much of a surprise. Kansas always plays pretty tough against the Longhorns. What do you think about the matchup with Texas?
Yeah, Randy, this is a hard one to pick out because, you know, Kansas hasn't, you know, against a lot of the Big 12 teams, it's been a struggle. You know, they're showing up, and we all knew this, Kay. They don't have the physical strength. They've over time, the strength and conditioning, they're behind physicality-wise with some of the guys that they're facing in the Big 12, and that's something that they'll improve on over the next year or two once they get in Gildersleeve's program. But, you know, I think about that game 2 years ago, right? And Kansas goes down there. Texas is pretty good. Texas is a big favorite. And KU almost wins a game, okay? But you look back at that. I mean, you had Carter Stanley was hot. He threw for 320, 340. I mean, you had Stephon Robinson. You had Parchment. I mean, Kwame Laster was like the third look at wide receiver. You had Puka Williams, almost had 200 yards rushing that game. So Kansas had some weapons. You know, you always try to go back in the past and say, okay, 2 years ago, you know, can history repeat itself? And then you start looking at why it did. And listen, that team 2 years ago had some weapons. I mean, they had some guys that could make plays and do things with the ball in their hands. So a lot of this, you know, like Ketchum said, if Kansas comes ready to fight, it's going to be a football game. That's what he said. You know, Texas, you got a lot of things going on. They're in a four-game losing streak. They got a lot of things going on behind the scenes. You got the distractions. You got the whole pole assassin gal with the monkey that bites the trick-or-treater. I mean, you got the D-line coach, you know, who's yelling to kids to get in the portal. That thing made its way on social media today.
That was something.
Well, Sarkisian had to address that today. And, you know, I talked to Ketchum and recorded him before Sarkisian went today. Something else Sarkisian said. I mean, Bijan Robinson may not play, and Ketchum touched on that a little bit. But I've watched him this year, and the first thing I said when I watched him run, I said, man, the Kansas defense won't be able to tackle him, okay? Because he had 200 yards against TCU. He came back with like another 135 against Oklahoma State. And listen, Oklahoma State's defense is really good, okay?
No doubt.
Then Sarkisian said today, Roshan Johnson may not play. That's like the next guy behind Robinson at running back, DeMarvion Overshawn, he may not play. That's Texas' leading tackler. So, you know, their offensive line has been up and down. You know, obviously they're in a little bit of a funk. So you never know what's going on. So to me, it's a hard game to look at. I sit here on the Kansas side and say, okay, who's going to be the quarterback? Okay, is it going to be Jason Bean? Is it going to be Jalen Daniels? We don't know. I don't know what the difference would be. Bean's obviously played a little more. I thought Jalen Daniels came in and looked pretty solid against Kansas State. I mean, he didn't look like a guy. You know, now it's one of those things. Hey, I'm a terrible golfer, right? But every now and then I'll go out and I'll go hit the ball and I'll be like, wow, I mean, it's straight and everything. Okay, and you're not thinking. You're just going out, and then the next two times I play, I'm awful. I'm terrible, right? But sometimes coming in with no pressure, no stress, you're just kind of playing carefree and letting it ride. Maybe Jalen Daniels looked good because of that. I think we all know Daniels has talent. He can run. He's got a big arm. You know, he's got velocity on his throw. He can air it out. So, you know, I don't know. You know, we'll see. Texas to me is still. Their backs are against the wall. They're still going to be talking about a bowl game. You know, can these guys come together, rally at home, get things going in front of the home crowd, and finally get back in the win column? So, again, you know, Ketchum said, I thought this was interesting, he said Kansas can bring their B-minus game and still be in the game. And so I don't know. I don't know that Texas is bad as some of the people are making it out to be. That is a tough football school now. I mean, that is a fan base that wants to win, believes they should be winning. They've seen what national championships are. They've seen a tradition-rich program. So the bar is pretty high there. So obviously, man, those guys, I was on their message board, and those fans down there, I mean, they are fired up so far about this losing streak, especially in Sark's first year. So, you know, I just here's the bottom line, Randy. The game's at 31 points. Before we got on the podcast, I went and checked out Vegas Insider. And the line's gone up, okay, to 31. So sometimes you got to kind of pull yourself back and go, okay, does Kansas really have a puncher's chance? Yeah, you know, probably they do. They've got to play well. Texas has got to play bad. But then when you go look at that line, you go, we're talking 31, okay? The pros in Vegas have that thing at 31 points. So they are saying right there, they definitely think Texas, without a doubt, is going to win this thing easily. Listen, I think Kansas, I do think the kids play hard under Leipold. I think they're still learning. They are improving. There are small strides. You know, they've talked about it with some of the improvements that the Kansas team had last year after 9 games. Some of the things they've done. You know, just talking to the players on yesterday, the players, you know, these guys buy into the system. They like what the staff's doing. I think the program's going in the right direction, but I just don't know if they're ready to go down there and win in Austin. But I said the same thing 2 years ago. So I'm going to come in with this one. I'm going to say Texas 34, Kansas 17. Give me yours.
You know, Texas 31-10.
Okay. Well, we're splitting hairs a little bit. We're not too far off.
Exactly. I think after so many years of doing this thing together and picking games against each other, I think we've settled into a groove where we're kind of on the same wavelength. And whenever we get too far off of that, that's when my eyebrows kind of go up, because I'm like, okay, wait a minute. For once we don't see it the same way. I feel like, you know, there's an opportunity. I think they have a chance to catch a team again. But I mean, this is a Texas team that this feels weird coming out of my mouth. Like you mentioned, this is a Texas team that is in the midst of a 4-game losing streak. When was the last time that happened in Austin? And, you know, with the monumental financial investment that Texas makes into football, to have the kind of, to be seeing the kind of results they're seeing under Steve Sarkisian, there's a lot of heat. I mean, you were talking about the video with the defensive line coach, you know, and it's just nuts. I don't know. I think they're in turmoil down there, but at the same time, it's growing pains, really, is what it is. And I think they're going to be looking to try to get right as quickly as possible and demonstrate that, hey, things aren't as bad as maybe as some people have thought. So I think, you know, I think 31-10, I think they're at least 3 scores better. It just depends on how motivated they are. I mean, if they want to, they can put a big crooked number on the scoreboard. But at the same time, you know, Kansas has shown they've made progress. Guys are starting to settle into the systems that they want to run, especially on defense. There's been a lot of improvement just in regards to how steady that the offense is playing now. We're not seeing the turnovers. We're not seeing the penalties that have plagued this program for so very long. Just little things like that. I'm curious to see if we can continue that kind of progress and see how long they can hang in against a team that is going to be exponentially more talented than they are. It may have their mind on other things. It may be a situation similar to the one against Oklahoma, except you're going on the road this time. So we will see. John, you know, you talked about some other topics that were discussed on the message board, or I want to talk about some other topics that were discussed on the message board, because it really seems that, you know, we talk about it every week because the transfer portal is that subject, that topic that is just never going to go away, especially in what is the wild, wild west that we're living in right now. What are your thoughts on the latest development with the portal, and what are some of the things that you're hearing about what this staff is doing to maybe be active behind the scenes?
Yeah, you know, Randy, one of the things I definitely want to address is I don't know how I can say it enough for all the fans who follow recruiting. They're just people are going to have to understand this is going to be a different class for KU, maybe a class that they've really never seen before. Okay, number one, they don't have but maybe 13, 14 spots total to give right now. Now, that could change if kids enter the portal after December 15th. Okay, they could get spots back, but we're talking real life right now as we stand. So with that, you know, I think you're looking at probably 5 high school kids, okay, maybe 6 if the right one comes along. Then I think you're possibly looking at maybe a few junior college players, not a lot, mm-hmm. just a few to hit some, you know, hit some holes that they think of guys who can make quick impacts. And if they don't find those guys, they won't go on them, okay? And then the rest, I think, will be filled with portal players. Now, with the portal players, you got to understand, they could get a commitment from a portal player, and unless that kid goes public, the staff could do everything they can to keep that thing down out of the public, okay? Because number one, a portal player is not bound by anything. They could sign a financial agreement, okay, but that doesn't bind them to anything. They can still leave. So This whole portal thing is going to be very interesting. I still think they could bring some portal guys in for official visits. But a kid could tell you he's coming on December 15th, and then on January 10th, some school could have a spot open up or they decide to go after a position. They can offer the guy that's committed to you, and he can just turn and say yes to them in a heartbeat, and he can leave with nothing tying him to the school. Listen, it happened with Felipe Franks. It was something that never got out a lot, but Felipe Franks told the coaches at Kansas he was going to go to Kansas, okay? But he kept his options open, and then along came Arkansas. So guys would be smart to commit, get themselves in line somewhere, and then play it out, which makes it a dangerous game for the coaches because you could spend all your time on a select few guys only to have them leave. So, listen, this is going to – people need to brace for a weird December and a weird January because we don't know how this is all going to play out. So, something else I talked about was – you know, this is going to be a year that you've got to throw recruiting rankings at the board. I know fans always look at them. You know, I always joke they're for entertainment purposes only. But Kansas is going to have a small class. And they're also going to have to go after guys in the portal. So when you go after the guys in the portal, okay, those guys don't count toward the recruiting rankings. So they are not, Kansas is not going to accumulate a lot of points. So the person who doesn't really understand this and doesn't follow it, at some point they're going to look at KU's recruiting and they're going to be sitting at the bottom of the Big 12 with less commitments reported and less recruiting points than everybody else. And people are going to say, oh my God, Kansas, what is going on at Kansas? What's the staff doing? Well, you don't get those ranking points when you're going to attack this the way Kansas does. And listen, Kansas isn't reinventing the wheel, okay? There are a lot of other schools out there who got better this year because they hit the transfer portal as well, and they're going to do it again. So there's going to be a lot of people looking at players in the transfer portal. So, and you know, there's one other thing, Randy, I wanted to touch on. We've talked about this on the board, and I said I would talk about this as well on the podcast, is in a way you're handcuffed, like the Kansas coaches, okay? And I've seen this mentioned on other boards too, that, you know, this is going to be easy. You know, December 14th or 15th, you go tell 3 or 4 kids, hey, we don't want you returning. We don't ever see you playing here. You should hit the portal, things like that. You can't do that, okay? Because now the players have the ability to say they were forced out. And if there's a way that that's proven or it comes up as a fact it can happen. You don't get that spot back if it proves you ran somebody out. Now, something else to look at. The COVID year, okay? When you look at Kansas roster right now, you see a lot of kids will be listed as a sophomore or a junior, okay, where you think you have 2 years left or 1 year left. Well, really, you have 2 and 3 left in those situations because you get a COVID year back, but it is the institution's choice whether you get that year back or not, okay? So that's something else that's going to come in play that we haven't talked a lot about either, that if there's a guy who's a senior, a staff can say, hey, we're not going to honor your COVID year, okay? That's not running them off, okay? That's just saying we're not going to give you the year back that we have an option to. So I just think fans are going to have to understand recruiting news. Listen, we can come up with all kind of news and updates of just offers going out in the 2023 class, okay? Because the staff is getting a normal start on that. They're way behind in the 2022 class because they came in and they didn't even get their staff assembled till May. So there were already other coaches recruiting those 2022 guys for months and months before them. So, and I still think that, you know, the way that the roster shapes up, if they can go out and find a combination of 8 portal guys and JUCO guys combined who they feel are physically ready to play, that could be a big boost to the roster if they can find kids who can contribute that quick. So I think people are just going to have to be real patient with recruiting. They're going to have to understand that the rankings are not going to reflect anything because Kansas is going to be playing almost to a little bit different set of rules and smaller numbers than a lot of people are. So that's the big thing right now as we head into this Texas game, how the portal stands right now and where recruiting is.
John, I want to wrap this up. Just tell me a few names that you're monitoring right now of recruits that you've talked to, people that still could be in position to maybe join this class before it's over.
Well, we talked about the portal, okay? So there are guys out there. I promise you the staff is building relationships right now. You've got Zoom. You know, they can get to know the kids, you know, while they're watching them talk. Everybody knows how to do Zoom now. You can get the parents on there. So I promise you there are portal guys in the portal right now. They are talking to who is out there, because the portal guys don't get into the interviews as much as a lot of people do. You know, you might see them post something on Twitter that they've picked up a new offer, but you don't see a lot of interviews with the portal guys. Right now, you know, Xavier Benson, a linebacker out of JUCO in Texas, is one I'm watching. He just picked up Oklahoma State. So, you know, some things are starting to come in on him. Hey, on the high school level, Dominique Orange. Okay. I'm hearing here in the upcoming days, he could be deciding on the places he's going to officially visit. He told me that, you know, Kansas was one of those schools he plans to. We'll see how that turns out. Mason Ellis out of Mulvane. I think he is the type of guy that Kansas can build on. He's the, you know, a local kid. He's got talent. He can run. I watched him run sub 4.5 at the camp. You know, he's the type of guy they can build on locally. More junior college guys. Isaiah Adams, offensive lineman out of Garden City, grew up in Canada. He told me, he goes, oh, I know all about Kansas. I loved Andrew Wiggins. So, you know, he grew up in Canada. And so, you know, he's familiar with Kansas. Nadami Tucker, defensive end from Hutch, I think he's going to visit. Another defensive back out of Hutch, Marquise Gilbert, Moses Alexander, defensive back out of Kilgore. I know the staff has been in touch with a lot of these guys. And like I said, when people hear, oh, they're going to go after junior college players, they're not going to go after 12 of them. They're not going to go after 13 of them like some people have done in the past. I think you're talking like 3, okay? So there's no reason to set off alarms or anything like that. And like I said earlier, I think they only take junior college kids if they find the right one and the right fit. I don't think they're just going to say, we're taking a guy just to be a filler. I think they're going to be really particular about it.
That's our man, John Kirby, on the Kansas football beat. We heard from Shea Wildebor earlier. We talked about all the latest, including the newest additions to the Kansas men's basketball program with National Signing Day having come and gone for the early signing period. We previewed the matchup with Texas. We talked to Jeff Ketchum from orangebloods.com. Thank you to Jeff for joining us for another very entertaining conversation as we gear up for Saturday's matchup with UT. You've been listening to myself, Randy Withers, as well with my friend Shea Wildebor and John Kirby. This is the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We will talk with you again soon.